Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
And you're listening to Fiber Talk, and we play with needles.
Yes, we do.
And this week, she's twisted, she's a stitcher, and she's back with us. Vonna Pfeiffer. Hi, Vonna.
Hi, Gary. Hi, Christine.
Welcome.
Thanks for joining us again.
Thank you. Well, it was an honor. I was just so shocked when you asked me back.
Well, we have things to talk about.
Yes, we do.
I always have lots to talk about.
Yeah, we have things to talk about, and we know you can talk for hours, so we're good to go.
Well, so many questions. So we've been talking about, well, and Gary was just saying, you know, now we have questions on so how exactly did you do this? So it might be a good thing to do this time to do some of those things, you know, talk about the nitty-gritty of particular troubleshooting things.
I'm happy to talk about whatever you want to talk about.
So the video that you did where you just stitched outside with the wind chimes, what kind of response did you get to that?
I've had a lot of positive response about that, which I kind of thought I was going to get a lot of negative response about that because after I did it, I saw that they really couldn't see what I was doing. So I bought a new thing off of Amazon that I think that maybe it might help for the next time. And I've just been too busy to set out there and do it and try it. But I've got a lot of positive responses about that. And it was fun. It was kind of fun to do. And so I'm planning on doing another one, see how my new gadget works. And we'll see. We'll still see how that goes. There's a lot of people on the groups on Facebook that say, they want more videos like that. I'm not the only one that's done it. There's been other floss tubers that have done that. And people say, you know, they like to just, they don't have a stitching buddy. And so that it's fun to just sit and stitch while somebody else is stitching on camera. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that idea.
Yeah. I thought it was a fun idea too. So.
Yeah. It was fun. I think it also does the, able to look in and see how you go about things. And I think that helps people a lot. They don't need to talk to you, but just to see how you go about things, see how people with a lot of experience go about their stitching. I think it's helpful to see that. I wouldn't mind if other people did it just to see just how careful they are, how fast they are. I was amazed at how quickly you make X's. You've made a few billion of them, I'm sure. But I look at how fast I stitch, and I'm not a fast stitcher, and you just trot right along, and that was informative to me just to see that.
And you know, that's the one thing that I really why I enjoy those videos is for the very reason that you said is that everybody has their own rhythm and their own way of doing it, and I really enjoy seeing that too. So that's why I did it. And I get asked that a lot. How do you stitch? How fast do you go? And how do you answer that unless, you know, you just have to show them. So right. I believe that is good. That's one of the reasons why I like it too. So.
Yeah. And then, I had never seen anybody stitch, with a scroll frame on a stand like yours, the lap stand you have, but whether it's floor or lap stand. And I saw the real benefits of that because when I use my scroll frame, I'm clamping it down. And, matter of fact, we're recording here on Thursday night. I just got back. A friend of mine helped me take my wood stand and put a new top on it with arms so that I can just rest my scroll frame on there. So I could really see how just having that scroll frame loose on the stand so you can just flip it over and flip it back is a real plus. And because I'm sitting there loosening and tightening and adjusting with every thread, and so now I'm looking forward to just having that thing loose resting on the arms and flipping it over. So that was helpful to me. And of course that lap stand you have, well, that's a beautiful little piece of equipment there.
It was, you know, if you would have told me a year ago that I'd be stitching with a stand like that, I would have told you were crazy. But when I started using roller frames, and I would have told you you were crazy if you would have if you said, are you ever going to use a scroll frame? I would have said, you're crazy. No, I'm not ever going to do that, because I was pretty much sold on Q-snaps. But when I started using roller frames, and it was, you know, bulky to hold, and I have, like, wrist issues anyways because of how much hand work I do in finishing and just the sheer amount of cross-stitching that I do. And my doctor makes me wear braces on both my hands every night to keep them immobile, to, like, rest them while I sleep, and so that I don't curl them at night. Well, anyways, I started searching. When I started using roller frames, I started searching for an idea, you know, a stand, because I had a needlework system for stand, and I was sold on that. And but I didn't like their setup for the scroll frames. And you have to use theirs. And I didn't want to use theirs. I wanted to use roller frames. And I saw this wooden stand and just this little man. And I think he's in South Carolina, North Carolina, makes them. And they are economically, you know, they're not very expensive. Or I don't feel like they're very expensive. It's a handmade by his hands. And it just really is fat. I just really like it. I can't say enough about it. So, yeah, it's been very beneficial. It's quick. It's nice. I just set it on. I can take it anywhere, and I do. I do take it everywhere with me, and it's just really nice. That has been a real fabulous thing that I did. I bought it about, it'll be a year in October that I bought it, and it's just really enhanced my stitching life. So.
So what? Just can you say the name of the frame that you're using now that you like?
I can't, it's not really, it's just a little old man makes it in South Carolina. It's not really, and I can give the information to anybody that wants to contact me and do it. I don't want to give it out over, you know, this, because he's just a little old man that makes them. And, I've sold so many of them for him that he sent me a week ago, a hand turned wooden vase that he turned and made himself, and gave me the sweetest note. And it made me cry when I opened it, because his handwriting reminded me of my grandfather, who was also a carpenter. And, it's similar to the Judy O'Dell stand. It's Judy O'Dell has a stand, a floor stand, and the arms are similar to hers, but this is just an all-in-one, very compact lap stand, and that he makes, and it's nice. It's very nice. It's made out of red oak, and he varnishes it nicely, and it's just really nice. Very, very good workmanship. So,
well, and it sits there on your lap. I mean, you weren't struggling with it at all. You just sat there, and you were just able to stitch without thinking about it. And so it obviously is well designed and works perfectly for you.
Yes, and it's very ergonomic, and you know, it's thin along the base, so it fits right up next to your belly. And I like my work close to me, and it's just well designed and well fashioned and just great.
Yeah, it's interesting. I never thought I would have one stand, and now I have two of them. Because I have, you know, because I have a Case Creation that I use for needlepoint when I'm on stretcher bars, and that works just fine for that. But then when I try to clamp a scroll frame on there, it's too far out, and I had this other wooden stand before that. And so what I've been doing with the scroll frame is I'll take the clamp from the wooden stand and put it on the other end to support it. And then I'll stitch, you know, the length of a thread. Then I got to take it all apart to turn it over to start, to end it off. So now, I have two of them. But now that we've fitted the wood one with arms, then now I'll have one that will handle the scroll frame just right. But these floor stands or lap stands, either one are just to me are almost essential in many ways. As Christine, I'm sure, sits there right now, all contorted, hanging on to stretcher bars and stitching.
I'm not contorted. I'm coming around to the idea that a lap frame might be the right sort of middle ground for me. So Gary and I have talked about this, where I don't want to sit in a chair, like an upright chair sort of thing, to stitch. I like to kind of, you know, sit cross-legged half the time and do all kinds of... So a stand frame wouldn't necessarily work for me, because there's no way for me to, you know, it would be too rigid. Mm-hmm. So what I'm looking to do now is to find something that's more of a lap stand. That's kind of like what you were working on.
Mm-hmm.
Because then it's more portable and it's more, you know, I can contort the way that Gary hates, and it works for me.
you can contort any way you want. I don't care. It's not my back and hips. Do whatever you want. Okay, so Lana, now I was practicing last night. You know, the technique that you use with Thread Heaven and stitching, and when you come back up through the linen or whatever the cloth is, doesn't matter. You come up with the eye, and eye of the needle, and it helps you keep. If you're using two strands, you don't have to monkey around with laying tools or railroading. And so describe that technique, because I've been practicing with it, and I have questions for you. And it seems like mm-hmm. I'm having to take a little, make a little extra effort to learn. But as I got done last night, I started to feel like I was getting the hang of it. But tell about that technique that you have. And you have at least one, if not two, videos that show it. But this is mm-hmm. completely your own thing, right?
Well, I believe it is my own thing. I've had a couple of older ladies say that, oh, they were taught that way by their grandmothers or something like that. But I did not have anyone show me that. I came up with it on my own. And it was by sheer accident, kind of probably how fire was discovered is how I discovered it. And how that was because I just hate changing. Before I started doing the pin stitch, I just hated changing threads, and I would work it down to where it was just a nubbins. And, I had 1X left of this color, and I couldn't like turn my needle to go down or anything like that. And I thought, well, I'm just going to try to go down with the eye, you know. And I did it that way. And when I did it that way, I went down with the point and I, you know, down through the cloth with the point and then up through the cloth with the eye rather than turning my needle underneath. And when I did that, just on that one stitch, I was like, whoa, that stitch really looks nice. And so then that's how it happened, is I just did it by chance because I didn't want to start a new thread on one stitch. And so then the next row, I got my new thread and I started and I thought, I'm going to try to do that just to see what it's like. And I played around with it and I figured out that you never have to dangle your thread, you know, your needle to untwist the thread. The thread never twists. If you never turn your needle, the thread never twists, and you don't have to railroad. You don't have to use a laying tool. And then I started, you know, how could I make it better? And so I started using Thread Heaven, and that made it even better. And because, you know, if you do Thread Heaven and put it on right, where you run it through the Thread Heaven, then you take it and you run your fingernail over it, that creates like a polarity on those individual threads. And they will actually repel each other. So they'll lay side by side when you lay them on, you know, when you stitch with them. And when you use my technique, down with the point, up with the eye, they really lay, they're beautiful. Even white thread lays beautiful. And so I started, you know, experimenting with Thread Heaven. And then I found that I don't know why I started doing this, but I never have like short tails, like my needle down to the end of the thread. I always have long tails, and then as I'm stitching, I'll move my needle down the length of the thread. And the value that I've seen in that over the years is that your thread doesn't wear it as much if you do that. If you're constantly moving your needle down the length of the thread, mm-hmm. your thread does not wear, so it won't fuzz. And I found that, and then I found that, you know, when you're putting the needle down or bringing it up in a space that already has threads in that space from, you know, other stitches, that if you keep the tail longer, that you'll have less likelihood to split those threads. Now, why? I don't know. But that's what I have found. And I also complete my X about 97% of the time as I go, whether I'm using over-dye threads or DMC. I have found personally that completing my X as I go and using my techniques creates even tension and better X's. So that's my whole technique in a nutshell is, I've experimented. I've stitched like this exclusively probably for 20 years. And, now to go back and stitch with the eye down and the eye or the needle point down and then turn and needle point up is like awkward for me. I almost can't do it. So
now see, all right. So several questions here. Now, I'm working on a shepherd's bush stocking, and that's all pearl thread. And so I first started using your technique, and I haven't done cross stitch in quite a while because the last stocking just burnt me out on it. And so this is the first time that I've done any cross stitching here, just in the last 3 or 4 weeks, in a long time. And so with the pearl thread, I started using your technique of the eye up from the bottom and immediately saw the benefit of that because I wasn't having to watch, you know, how pearl will get either too tight or too loose if you, and quickly, and it starts to look sloppy. And immediately that was not happening. So, it was just single strand pearls, of course. But I immediately got benefit from that in that the twist on the pearl was staying more consistent throughout the X's. So that started to hook me right away because that, I get real tired of watching. To me, at least, you got to watch that pearl thread if you're doing a lot of it really closely because it will get too tight or too loose if you're not careful. And then whatever stitch you're doing is kind of all over the road. So so that helped me a lot with that. But I was always one of those that would do, as long a row as I could of a half cross and then come back. And that's just the way I was taught and the way I always did it. And I would sit and map things out so I could do these long strings of half across and then come firing back and complete them. And I thought, well, I'm going to try it your way and I'm just going to make full X's each time. And I have to say that I agree with you. I'm getting better results. But the other benefit, and I'm with you, I hate starting and ending threads. The more hassle those are, the less I want to stitch. But the other benefit I was getting out of making full crosses was that I had more thread on the back to weave ends into. However I'm doing it, which I think is the way you do it. So I felt like it was easier to end threads because, there was more on the back and I could weave and I could do a Bargello hook. So I'm happier with the way my threads are ending off as a result of that too.
I can tell you that, you know, if people would try it, they would see the benefit of it. That's the whole thing. I mean, you just have to prove it to yourself. That's what you've done. And you're right. It does not twist. I mean, I've done pearl cottons like the Bent Creek, those big, they're like on burlap similar to what, you know, they're those kits. And you're right. The pearl cotton doesn't twist as easily. It lays very nicely. And when you complete your X, it's like uniform, you know, there's like a uniformity in there and you're right. You do have a way to easily end your threads when you're done. So I sold myself and I think that I've sold some other people, but you never know, I guess.
Okay. So then last night, then I was giving, I did a real good practice on the latest, 12 Days of Christmas that are done on Red Gingham. And I don't remember the name of the designer. Those ornaments.
Hands on Design, Kathy Haberman.
Yeah, those. Yeah, the coolest ornaments yet for 12 days. Yeah. But now here's where I was using two strands of DMC on that cloth, which is, I don't know, is it 30 or 40 point, or 40 threads count, whatever. I don't know what it is. Anyway.
If you got the one that is, it's called for, it's 28 counts.
That's 28 count. Okay. So yeah, it's fairly fine. So I'm stitching with that. Now when I ran it through that, ran the strands through the thread heaven, and then you said your fingernail, because I was bringing my fingers down the thing twice, and I would get some polarity, but not enough. Is it the fingernail that does it?
I always just put it between, so my pointer finger and my thumb. So my pointer finger, I just laid against the pad, the thread against the pad, and then my thumbnail, I just run it against it. I just run it against the thread. So yeah, I use my, but I think if you would do it with your finger a couple of times, that would work too.
Okay. All right. I'm going to try the nail then. So, okay. And then when I'm stitching, and this is where the crux of it, was I was coming up, going, you know, doing it the way you show, and I would say maybe 60-70% of the time I was getting the two strands to lay pretty flat or you know, the way they should, but I was still finding myself picking up the laying tool and rearranging threads more often than I wanted to, and I watched that video where you just stitched and didn't say anything, and you never flinched. I mean, you just flew. And that's what I was hoping I would get. So is there some practice involved there till I get these X's to lay right?
I think that there's some practice involved. And then that material, the fabric that you're working on is Weeks Dye Works. And the weave on that, I struggle with Weeks Dye Works fabric. The weave on Weeks, I mean, it's beautiful fabric, but it's a little looser,
yes,
loosely woven. And so when I'm doing those very same ornaments, and I struggle a little bit with laying my stitches on that as well. So it kind of depends on the weave of the fabric, like Lakeside, Zweigert. Those, you know, you'll go just as fast as what I was doing on my Stitch With Me video. But like Weeks Dye Works, it's, you have to kind of watch that. You know, you kind of have to massage them in there a little bit.
Okay, but, you okay. Know,
Gary, have you ever tried a snag nabbit?
No.
Okay, I would suggest, highly recommend getting a snag nabbit. They're like $2, less than $2, and you can find them anywhere. Clover makes them. And when I have legs of my stitches that maybe don't look quite that great, you just like snag nabbit, and by golly, they come out looking great. So.
Okay.
Get a snag nabbit. In my video, there's the, towards the end, I think I do use the snag nabbit in a couple of areas.
Oh, that's what that was. I wondered what the heck you were poking through the cloth there.
Yeah, that's a snag nabbit.
Okay.
And what that does, it's for sweaters. Like, you know how if you get like a, you're wearing a sweater and it gets like a pull on it.
Mm-hmm,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
You take that snag nabbit and it's like a needle on one end, and then on the other end it's got like this swirly, like swirl design, and you stick it through the sweater and grabs the thread and pulls it through the sweater, so it hides the snag. And on cross stitch, it's the same theory, is that if you have like a thread that's a leg of the of your stitch that might be higher than the rest of the stitches, or a loose leg that you didn't weave under well enough comes up on the top when you pull your thread, you just snag nabbit it down, and it just comes out perfect. So I use a snag nabbit if I see my like a leg or an arm of my cross stitch looking a little funky. I'll use a snag nabbit. So.
Okay, and I'm glad to hear you say that about that cloth, because I was fighting the entire time to keep my tension even, but not collapse the threads. I was really fighting with it, and I'm used to doing a lot of needlepoint where you can crank pretty good on the stuff, and it was slow going there for a while. I was getting kind of frustrated.
Yeah, and you know, like I have a beautiful piece in it that I've stitched, and it's done on a week's linen, and a higher count, or lower count, like a 30 count, I think is what it is. And It's beautiful. It's done in silks, but if you look really closely at my stitches, you can see wonkiness, and it's from the weave, and I won't take that to the fair because I know that I'll get dinged, and so I won't take it. but that's just one of the things you have to really work with when you work with weeks. But I will tell you one thing. I don't know if you've heard me on my videos talk about Best Press. It's like a spray. It's not a starch. It's a starch alternative.
Oh, yes. Yes, you have. Yes, uh-huh.
Okay. Well, if you best press your week's dye works linen before you start stitching it, so you best press the heck out of it and iron it and then put it on whatever in your hoop or whatever, that'll clear up a lot of your weave issues with week's dye works.
Oh, okay.
It'll give it a little bit of little oomph so that
something
weave,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it gives it a little bit of stability, and it makes it easier to stitch. So I always just best press it right before I put it in my Q-snap or whatever I'm going to stitch it in, and that has made a world of difference.
All right, I'll give that a try. I've stitched on the Partridge one is the pear, but probably too late to best press the rest of it or go ahead and do it.
Like on what you're already stitching right now, you can best press it. Just make sure that it's on the backside and kind of like on a terry cloth towel to, protect the stitches, the fluffiness of your stitches. Best press it from the back and you can do it right now. So.
All right. I'll give that a try. Where do I get this stuff? Grocery store?
You can get it at Walmart, Joann's, Amazon, anywhere.
Okay. Okay. All right. I'll give that a try. I was getting frustrated. I just wasn't getting the quality that I wanted out of it, and I could see the technique working, but the cloth was definitely working against me. So, yeah. All right. Let's see. What else? Did I have any other questions of you? No. Oh, and I can't thank you enough for the diagonal pin stitch. Holy smokes. I am wearing that thing out. That is just fantastic. Everything that now, all the cross stitching I'm doing right now, it's all getting started with that diagonal pin stitch. That's just fantastic. And
I thought that was another one of the, oh my goodness, I invented fire when I did that. But I thought, boy, am I a genius. But then I've come and I found that other people had come on to that. I had always done it the other way, down the, down the center of the X. I'd done it that way for years to do scattered stitches or start my stitches. Especially when I was doing over dyes, if I couldn't do a loop method, I always started with the traditional pin stitch. But I got dinged on that at the fair last year, and because they could see the arm of the pin stitch on the side, kind of showing from the side. So.
Oh.
I was dinging around, trying to figure out how can you start it without, and I thought, I wonder if I can do it this way, and it would just be the bottom leg of my stitch. And so I started doing it, and I started doing it that way all the time. And this winter, I was like, man, this is really fabulous. I mean, you can really start, I can start a thread, and I bet you I don't even have like an eighth of an inch behind it as a tail. And I can get it almost flush with the back and start it that way. And because I'm going back across where I brought up in the center, it anchors it every time, even the smallest amounts. So I was really excited about that too. And then I started searching online to, think, oh gosh, somebody, I need to tell people about this. And then I figured out that other people knew about it. But I really thought I was something there for a while, but. That bubble was burst. So, anyways.
That's all right. You had a moment there. It was worth it.
I did. I did have a moment.
Yeah. But it really is, because this Shepherd's Bush stocking I'm working on, I mean, there's three or four stars that just sit out in the middle of nowhere. And and I know you can use an away knot. And I'm so, whatever about anchoring threads that, you know, my away knot is like 4 miles down the road. And, you know, and so to start those stars that just sit out there by themselves, to do that with the pin stitch, boy, you know, I'm up and running right now. I don't have to knot up and figure out where I'm going to put the away knot and make sure I have enough so I can weave it in afterwards and, mm-hmm. And all those things. And boy, I just pin stitch and go, and it's fantastic. It really is.
So yeah, it's fast. It's fast, and I think it's, you know, structurally sound. And
locks it down right now. I mean, you can tell going anywhere.
It's just, it's, yeah, it was like a whole new moment for me when I started doing that. And man, I use it all the time now. I almost like it better than the loop method, to be honest with you, because I feel like, you know, I don't know. I just think that it's just really a great way to start your thread. It really honestly is. And I use a lot of over dyes anyway, so I can't do a loop method with over dyes. So right. I use it almost, you know, predominantly to start my threads. So
yeah, I don't know why I've never been a fan of the loop method just in general. I'd rather start it some other way. But this pin stitch. Mm-hmm. Well, you must have some real thread Nazis at that fair of yours. Holy smokes. They must be serious judges.
They don't tell you who they are, or, you know, you don't know who they are or what their name is or anything like that. And, I have had really wonderful ribbons, but I've never been the grand champion. And, you know, I feel like I've had a lot of success in my life with cross stitch, and why in the world am I not the grand champion? But anyways, I will say this, and a lot of, you know, people I feel need to do this. If you have a fair or any kind of contest near you, you need to enter your things into the fair. It's hard to take. It's a little hard to take to listen to people say negative things about your stitching.
Right, but then how do you learn, though?
That's what I'm going to say.
You're not doing the right thing if you don't let somebody tell you the thing that you're not doing well.
Right, and I have grown as a stitcher so much since I started doing the fairs. I mean, I don't always agree with everything that they say, but by golly, I think really hard about every stitch that I lay, or everything that I do. I really think mm-hmm. hard about it. And, it's made me 100% better stitcher than what I was. So we'll see what this year's fair brings, but I highly urge anybody that has a chance to enter into their local fair or anything, you should do it, because that just draws more people to the, hey, I can do this, and look at that, isn't that great? And that's what we need to do, is we need to perpetuate the art of handwork, because in this day and age, a lot of people don't have the tenacity to sit and do something, and it's an art form. And mm-hmm. It's my Calgon moment. If I didn't have stitching in my life, I don't know who Vonna Pfeiffer would be. That's stitching makes me. I mean, I'm being serious. That is just, if I didn't have stitching, I don't know who I'd be. I really don't. So
crazed and cranky.
probably crazed and cranky. You're right.
So, but I think you hit on it when it comes to this judging thing. The key is, rather than getting all bent out of shape over the critiques, it sounds like you say, all right, let me evaluate what's being said and apply it and see if I get better, and use it, even no matter how it's presented, use it as something constructive that you can apply to get better. And sounds like that's the way you approach it then.
Well, I get mad at first. Okay. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to lie. I get mad at first, and I might think, well, by golly, how dare they say anything like that? But then after you cool off, I mean, it's hard to, I mean, I don't know, maybe other people can take criticism well. I don't take criticism well if I feel like it's not deserved. You know what I mean? At first, and you know, when you have a baby that you spent hundreds of hours on, and you take it to a judge and they say, well, this baby is freaking ugly. and you did not do, you did not dress this baby right. Anyways, it hurts. At first I'll get mad, and then I'll save the comment cards, and I'll read through them again after the dust has settled a little bit, and then I might get mad again. But then after I keep on reading them, and then I look at what they say, and I look at my piece, and then I think, you know, they're right, they're right. You know, I need to change this or that. And that's how I've learned as much as I've learned. And I'll research it. And, you know, there's not very many resources out on the internet that tells you about tension, that tells you about how to, you know, look, try this. This might work better to lay your, you know, Mary Corbett has a fabulous blog. I know you've talked about her before on your podcast. She's about the only person where you can find good quality, down to earth, useful information about a wide variety of subjects dealing with stitching. And, you know, she goes way beyond, you know, what I do, because all I do is cross stitch. And that's why I try to do what I do on my blog, because I'm trying to be the voice for the people that just crossed it, you know. And I've learned a lot. I've researched a lot. I've read a lot. And then I've tried to do practical knowledge that I've learned and try to come up with a way that makes me better as a stitcher. And then once I find it out, well, then, you know, why do I want to keep it to myself? I want to tell everybody how to be better stitchers so we all can be wonderful stitchers. So I try to share it with the people that read my blog or listen to my FlossTube or whatever. So I think it's all learning. It's good to pass the information. Sharing is caring. So yeah.
There we go. Sharing is caring. Writing that down right now.
So we just have to build a little bit of a thicker skin, I think, a little bit.
Yeah, and then you have to know that they're not out to get you. You know, they don't know who you are. They don't know who, you know, I am, I don't think. I mean, they're not supposed to look at your name. Mm-hmm. And so they don't know who I am, and they're not doing it to come after me. And you just have to remember and tell yourself that, and that you'll be a better stitcher once you, you know, take the criticism. Yeah. So, and that's what it really, honest to heaven, has made me a better stitcher. And I think another thing that's made me a better stitcher is that my only craft is cross stitch. That's all I do. And, you know, rather being a dabbler in many, I try to be a master of one. So, you know, I think that helps me too, to be the best stitcher I can be. So anyways.
Yeah. No question about that.
It's sort of inspiring to, you know, I think what you've hit on is the strategy in entering a fair, right? So, mm-hmm. So for me, I'm listening to you, and I'm listening to what you get out of it. And most people, I think the whole idea of entering a fair, especially if you come from an area where fairs are common, which in your, you know, metropolitan area, it's not, I think, as common as it is, other places.
Mm-hmm.
But you enter because you've done something you're proud of and you want to win, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what contests are, and that's what people do. But I'm kind of enamored with the idea of entering a fair simply for the idea of not winning. So what I mean by that is this. For myself, as you're talking, I'm thinking, what if I did a piece with no intention of winning whatsoever, simply for the idea that as part of the judging, somebody will look at my work and be able to tell me something that I will learn out of it, right?
Mm-hmm,
because
mm-hmm.
That's one of the things that I'm encountering here in New York, ironically, you know, in this place of a million billion people, is that there aren't stitchers around that I can work with. And so I'm working remotely and learning from people like you and Gary and watching, you know, something as simple as watching you stitch and oh, okay, you're doing it that way, that's better. This could be a good learning tool, is to mm-hmm. it's to submit something for criticism instead mm-hmm. of for, you know, for the idea of winning.
Right.
And I'm seriously considering, like, I should, you know, because I'm sure there are things coming up over the summer and the fall, and I kind of like the idea of doing a piece simply for the idea of giving to somebody who has some knowledge and expertise, assuming that, you know, the judges are fair and mm-hmm. and smart and experienced, and just throwing it in there and having them come back and say, all right, here's all the things that you could have done better.
Right.
I think that's valuable.
Yes, and it is very valuable. And the other very valuable thing is that you're putting your work out there for others to see, and it'll inspire people. I can't tell you how many people that, you know, because once they're judged, they'll put your, you know, they put the all of the entered pieces up on the wall at my fair, uh-huh. and it'll have your name on it, you know, and if you want a ribbon, it'll have your ribbon by it. And I can't tell you how many people, you know, go to the fair and then they'll see me and they say, hey, I saw your cross stitching. Man, that made me want to start cross stitching.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, in that way, it perpetuates the art. And so, you know, it's like a double good thing. You're like learning how to be a better stitcher for yourself. And then you're also perpetuating and sharing your art with other people to inspire them to become stitchers or to give it a try. And, so it's wonderful. It's a wonderful venue for people to share what their passion is and in the process make themselves a better stitcher or whatever, painter, photographer, whatever
anything,
you are.
Anything. Anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like this idea. I do.
Well, I hope you enter something.
I think, well, and again, like I really have no... I mean, I'm sure there's a tiny part of me that you know, would like to do well, obviously, but I really am, you know, as a beginner. See, and that's the difference, right? If this was something that I have, if I was entering a quilt or a sewn article of clothing, I would have an expectation that it would be good because it's something that I've done for a million years and you know, I can do it well. And so then if somebody came back and said, no, this is terrible, then I would be upset, right?
Mm-hmm.
I have a fair expectation that I know what I'm doing, right?
Right.
Whereas in this case, I don't have that. I have no preconceived notion of my own expertise. So, so for them to say, you know, yeah, this is, here's all the things that you could do better. For me, it's just it's an opportunity to learn. And you're right. It maybe that's part of it too, is that there just isn't that much needlework going on here. You know, again, we're having mm-hmm. this resurgence of knitting and crocheting and sort of yarn work,
mm-hmm.
Especially in urban areas here. But this sort of traditional needlework is really very far behind. So.
Yeah. And it's taken a real hit. I mean, you think that there's a lot of people doing it. If you watch FlossTube or you read blogs or you go to a Facebook group, you think, oh yeah, man, what are they saying that it's, but then when you're right, when you walk through, even here, you walk through the, you know, a coffee shop or something, there's, you know, three or four people sitting there knitting, but you don't mm-hmm. ever see anybody cross stitching, you know, that you're right. I agree with that. And, so that's another way of getting it out there to share with the people, because I think a lot of people still, and you'll hear this over and over and over, especially if you watch FlossTube videos, is that, well, I stitched in the 70s and 80s, but you know, it was teddy bears and ducks and realize that, boy, it really has changed. It has changed a lot. And, it's sad that people don't know that, you know, and
mm-hmm.
so I, that's one of the things that, you know, it's my passion to share and, hope that I inspire somebody to pick it up and start it for themselves. So.
Yeah. Well, I certainly, and I was a prime case of that because, you know, Gary and I would talk about stitching and knitting actually. And he asked about needlework and I said, yeah, I said exactly the same thing. Yeah. I think I did some cruel work when I was 12 and then I did samplers when I was little but now I haven't done anything because, you know, who wants to do like one of those, you know, giant eagles holding an arrow in their talons or a tiger or the wolf looking at the moon, like, you know, and there's nothing wrong with any of those things, but they're just kind of not my style.
Right.
And he said, oh no, sweetheart, let me show you some things. And just sent me.
I did not say sweetheart.
No, you didn't. That's true. You would never say that. But
no.
But
plus, you just slapped me all the way from Long Island. So
it was implied. It was implied in the tone of, oh, you have no idea what's out there, do you? And let me be the person to enlighten you, because it's a whole new world out there. And from that moment, I was completely hooked, because you're right. It's because it's so much more challenging and interesting to stitch now, because it's not all the same old, you know, you're not just covering canvas anymore.
Right.
So, you know, and I think you're right. If people understood that it's not like latch hooking. Remember latch mm-hmm. hooking?
Yeah.
You know, that's another craft that I did as a child, you know,
uh-huh.
long summers with six children and my mom saying, go outside and play for 9 hours and go occupy yourself. Latch hooking was a thing. But, you know, it's the same repetitive motion again and again, and you're not really doing anything. And needlepoint and cross stitch is not that at all. It's so much more complicated and so much more intellectually satisfying, I think.
Yes. Yes, I agree.
Two questions I got to get in, and we're going to run out of time, so I'm getting them in right now. Vonna, you see with your finishing business and, of course, all the stuff you do, you stitch yourself. You see a ton of needlework. And so I have two questions. One is, based on what you see, what tips could you offer people that would make their stitching better? And then what could you say to people that would make it easier for you to finish, that would give them a better finished result of their product, or if nothing else, make it so you could do it faster for them with the same quality? Because I'm sure even if they come in a little wonky, you fight like the daylights to get them perfect before you send them back out. But what things can people do to improve their stitching, and what can they do to send you a piece that is easier for you to finish and at some point I would suggest better result?
Well, the first thing that to make it easier for me to finish is don't be a linen or an Aida miser. Mm-hmm. I get so many things where, you know, we have four things on one piece that they want made into ornaments and different shapes and all this stuff. And there's like 1 inch in between all the stitch pieces. And, I can't walk on water and I can't make a margin bigger in between things that are all
right.
So, don't be a miser on your linen. That's the number one thing. And I can't tell you how many times, you know, and even experienced stitchers will like think, oh, well, there was plenty of room. No, there's not plenty of room. I have to have at least 2 inches around everything in order to finish. So if you're going to put two ornaments on one piece of linen, I need to have 4 inches in between your motifs. So that's the first thing.
Okay, so that's 2 inches all sides, no matter what the shape.
On all sides, yeah. No matter what the shape, I need at least 2 inches on all sides. Because think about it, you know, like, I have something that happened, you know, earlier this year, and oh, I want this as oval shape, you know, ornament, a flat oval shaped ornament, and there was like literally, I would have had like a half an inch from the edge of the design to where I had to cut. And, you know, think about an oval. It's fatter in the middle and it's shorter on the tops and the bottoms. And trying to explain that to her, you know, was just hard. And she thought I was being difficult and that I wasn't. And so that's the first thing. Just don't be a linen miser. We spend all this money on threads and needles and thread heaven and all this patterns and, just give yourself some room. You don't be a thread miser or a linen miser. As far as what I like, what you said, I see a lot of stitching, and I do see a lot of stitching. And I always tell, you know, that's the number one thing is when people are writing me to ask me to finish for them, they'll say, and please don't look at my backs. And I don't judge people's backs. I really don't. My backs aren't the, you know, the most lovely thing, some of them. And I don't judge backs. But I will say the two things that people do that make it hard for me and I feel make their finished product turn out less superior than what it could be is carrying threads, especially dark colored threads on a light colored linen, carrying it from one stitch to, you know, like 3 or 4 or 5 stitches over. Bad. That's bad, bad, bad. And there's no way I can hide that. And I've even gone so far as when I'm finishing and there's carried threads like that, I will actually cut it myself. And I've come to the point that, you know, I can spend, I don't charge. I know that people will probably say, oh yeah, that's true. Not true. I don't charge that much really for the time and effort that I put into finishing. I don't charge that much. And, I cannot spend an hour on one ornament, you know, fixing people's carrying threads. So I have quit doing that. And, but so if you carry your threads, there's no way I can disguise it. I don't try to fix it anymore. The other thing is just clipping your threads when you get done. Like once you weave it to the, if you're going to weave it to an end of a row, you make sure that you clip that thread flush with the end of the row or whatever. I can't tell you how many, I mean, it's almost every piece that I get to finish. There'll be thread, you know, tails sticking out at the edge of the row and you can see that. So you want, and I've been dinged on that at the fair myself. So I'm very sensitive because that's one of the things that I've been dinged on. So if you, when you weave your threads, you cut flush with the back of the fabric so that you don't have any little wispies or thread tails hanging out at the end, because you'll see it on the front. Every time you'll see it on the front. Even if it's a, you know, if it's black fabric, you won't. But if it's a light colored neutral fabric, you'll see it from the front. So those are the two things that I can say.
Do you, when you receive pieces, are they generally clean, or do you end up having to wash them in some way? Or is that something you just won't
do?
Oh,
no. Yeah, I don't wash it. I've had people ask me to wash, and I won't wash them. Because what if a thread runs or something, and it's your baby? So, now I iron, and I do all that stuff, but they come to me what I hope to be finished. And then, you know, clean and ready to go. And I get asked sometimes to... can you do French knots? I can't do French knots. Can you please do French knots? And I will do that. I don't like to do that because it's not, you know, it's your work. It's not my work.
Right, I'm
the finisher. I'm not the French knot maker. But I will do it. And but no, I will not wash anything just because I just don't want to take that responsibility in case a thread runs or something like that. Then it's my baby. So I ask everything to be washed and clean for me before I touch it. So.
Right. I don't mind doing French knots, but I'm telling you right now, I'd charge a buck a knot. Sure, I'll do them all day for you. A buck a knot.
I just do it and just do it out of the goodness of my heart. But I don't like to. And then, well, because, you know, a lot of times they'll say do French knots and they won't send the pattern. And then I don't have the pattern. So where am I supposed to know where the, unless it's like eyes or something, I don't know where the French knots are supposed to go. Anyways, I have to say, you know, where can you show me a picture? Or, I get asked a lot of things. Let me tell you, it's true. And, I get asked to do a lot of things and I try to, you know, do as much as I can for people, but I have to draw the line somewhere because if I, you know, it's getting to the point where I'm so busy finishing. I'm working 6 and 7 days a week, 8 and 12 hours a day finishing. I've finished, at the end of today, I have finished over 300 things since January 9th.
Wow.
So,
wow.
Yeah. So think about that. Think about how many, you know, at the end of this month, it'll be half a year is gone. And I have finished 300 things. So think about how many things I'll finish by the time December comes.
Right.
I'm really busy. So I can't take, you know, I take as much time as I can because I'm, you know, I always say great finishing takes a lot of time and I only do spectacular finishing. And I say that to people. And so, you know, it takes a lot of time. Finishing takes a lot of time. So I try to do I only send back what I believe to be as near perfect as what I can make it. And, so anyways, it just takes a lot of time and I can't hold everybody's hand, you know, and wash their projects and this and that
right.
for them. So
right. what's the best way for people to ship pieces to you, rolled up on tubes, or there's got to be a way you prefer to see them so that they arrive in the best shape?
Well, I have a whole business plan that explains everything from start to finish on how I want things to arrive to me. I have had things, you know, you see everything. I will have things wadded up and thrown in something and literally mailed to me. And then I have things almost delivered to me by all the king's horses and all the king's men. So there's a wide range in how I receive things. But what I ask people to do is, I don't really think it matters if it's flat or rolled up. I will have some clients that only send to me where it's rolled up and inside a tube. And I don't see that it's any different, honestly, from just making sure that it's inside. Like, I like my things to be in Ziploc bags, kind of flat, because, and then mailed priority. That's, you know, I like it to be mailed priority because it's more, it's quick. It has insurance. They pay more attention to priority mail than they do first class mail. So I ask in my, you know, my clients to put them inside a Ziploc bag, like each project inside a Ziploc bag. And if they have special directions or their material that they want used or their pom-poms or whatever, put inside so that each finish that they have has the difference on how they want it. And anything that accompanies that or is to be incorporated into that finish in a Ziploc bag, and then just stacked or whatever inside a priority mailbox is how I like it to come. That doesn't always happen, but that's what I think is most valuable or the best way to send it. But it doesn't matter to me. Like I said, I've had it wadded up and thrown, you know, emailed to, or, you know, first class. I've had it, you know, all the, I've had overnight, you know, I had to sign for it, FedEx. I mean, you know, I've had it all different kinds of ways. So it's, but I think my preference is just flat inside a Ziploc bag because that protects it from moisture, from the elements. And if anything, God forbid, would get wet or, you know, in it, that it would be protected in a Ziploc bag. So that's how I like it done.
Let's shift gears. You are doing some really cool things with your patriotic room. And then you sent me, for this podcast, you sent me a couple of pictures of pieces that you had finished that really are fantastic. But talk about your patriotic room. I really think that's a great idea.
Well, I it's just our office in our front room, and I just want everything in there to be patriotic. So I've been doing some smalls. I have stuff that I've done through the years, but I've really been focusing on it this year on finishing things exclusively for that room that is all patriotic. I think that it's important that we have pride in our country. And so that I'm doing that, and I'm teaching my kids, you don't have pride in our country by doing that. And there's been a lot of really great designs that's come out recently that is patriotic. So I've finished Little House Needleworks, has a thread pack collaboration with Classic Colorworks, and I finished those three this year, and I mounted them on, you know, you don't have to frame everything. That's the beauty of stitching smaller designs. You don't have to frame it. You can finish it really cute and hang it still like a picture if you want to. And so I did those. Brenda Gervais has had last year she had a limited edition thing and a cloche. It was called Flag Day at the Potting Shed, which I think I sent Gary a picture of that. I finished that this year. I finished the Blackbird Designs with an Uncle Sam hat. So all only patriot, you know, patriotic designs will be in this room. I have, you know, I'm working on that one that we did the Stitch With Me video on. That's the Let Freedom Ring by Lila Studio. I've got a lot of big designs that I'm working on that's patriotic. You know, the Early Americans by Little House Needleworks. I'm working on that. So I want people to, when they walk in that room, just drop their teeth when they see all my patriotic stuff. And it's getting close. It's getting really close. It's great. But another reason why I like patriotic designs is my birthday is July 5th. And my whole life, my birthday's always been celebrated on July 4th because that's when the family was together and it was just easier, you know. And so I always tell my kids that all the fireworks aren't because of, you know, our patriotism, you know, our celebrating July 4th, it's because they're, you know, in anticipation of my birthday. So,
Right. That's the way I go with it.
Absolutely. So I consider myself an honorary Yankee Doodle Dandy, and I think I need to have a patriotic room, so I'm going to have one. So that's the way I look at it.
I think it's just a great idea, and and the pieces you've been choosing to go in there, they all go together and have a similar look, but they're different. And I'm really anxious. I'm sure you'll show us a video or something when you get, when you feel like it's at least mostly completed. I don't know if it ever gets completed, but I'm sure you'll show us something, because it's going to, I like, you know, drop your teeth. Yeah, I got to believe it's going to be really awe-inspiring.
It is. It's going to be like, you'll just faint, Gary, when I see it. And of course I'm going to do, I plan on doing a, once I get it, especially when the early Americans piece is done and framed, I want to do it. And I want to take like a video tour of it. Like, here's this, here's that. So everybody's ooh and ah over it. I have the best time sharing everything that I do because I get such positive response. And that's just what's so, I mean, that's how come I want to learn, you know, do more, you know, stuff and share things, because I just, you know, I just have such great followers and wonderful friends that I've made through my sharing, and I want to inspire other people to do it. And I just share because I get such great response. I really do. So.
Yeah. Well, it, the fact that you're so sharing is such a plus for everyone, because people could go through your videos and read your blog and learn so much. And you know, a lot of finishers just finish because that's how they make money, but you do that and show everybody how to do it on top of it, and I think that's just fantastic. So,
oh, thank you, I appreciate that.
We got to stop. Hate that. That means you have to come back because I have more questions. So that means you got to come back.
Great. I feel like I've learned.
Oh, I want to come back. Will you let me come back, Gary? I want to.
Of course.
Please. We should. I want to do another. I can't wait to do another of your Stitch With Me's, though. I think those are so great.
Yeah, I'm going to do another one. I'll get another one going here soon. Like I said, I bought my gadget. I hope that it'll be up close and personal.
Yeah.
All right, we got to end this. Vonna, thank you so much. Really enjoyed the conversation once again, and thanks to everyone for listening and for the continued support. And we'll be back next week.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you, Gary. Thank you, Christine. I always enjoy talking to both of you.